We inform.
Religious freedom is about people of faith being able to live out their faith, live out their convictions, no matter where they are.
We equip.
Sacred honor is the courage to speak truth, to live out your free speech.
We also rejoice in our sufferings because we know that suffering produces perseverance, perseverance, character, and character, hope.
This is At the Core on American Family Radio.
Welcome to The Core here on American Family Radio. Glad to have you with us on this edition of the program. And as we do each week, we'll have Chris Woodward in with us in the last segment of the show. But between now and then, we have a couple guests here in the first segment and the second. Let's turn our attention to the scripture just briefly as we do to open each program. We've been in Proverbs chapter 4 this week and looking at verse 19. The way of the wicked is like darkness. They do not know over what they stumble. And boy, does that describe a lot of the cultural issues we face today, where people just aren't sure what they're stumbling over. And that's why we hope to bring truth and light here on the program. Well, we have a guest, a recent returning guest. We had Julie Pickren on recently to talk about the Department of Education being somewhat shuttered, although not formally, and what the states can do in the education realm. Julie's with serving on the Texas State Board of Education, representing several million children there in the state of Texas, and she has a lot of other hats that she wears as well, but she's with us now. Julie, welcome back.
It's my honor to be back.
Yes. So tell us, we didn't have time when you were on the program with me, I don't know, a week or two ago. We didn't have time to do kind of your backgrounder and stuff. We just jumped right to some of the news of the day. But give me a little bit of your background.
I'm going to start it off with God has a sense of humor.
Yes.
Like most people who love the Lord and Romans 8:28 calls it love the Lord and called according to his purpose. If somebody would have told me that I would have been serving in education 20 years ago, if they would have told me what my life looks like now, I would have thought that they probably needed some mental help.
Yes. But here we are.
And God's way is always the best way. It's not always what we have planned, but the Lord knows the desires and dreams that he puts inside of our heart and what's going to ultimately fulfill us. We just have to, as I say, trust him and hold onto the hem of the garment.
Yes, that's right.
So how I got to, I had the wonderful opportunity to start serving in education was I lived in the fastest growing school district in Texas. Every summer, the school district was adding about 1,000 to 1,500 kids every summer and projected to do that for 20 years. So
wow.
I'm talking about very rapid expansion. The district covered 252 square miles, mostly rural, but the city of Houston, economy's booming, everything's going, and this was one of the last major corridors of Houston to build out. And so I have a very strong background in business, never in a million years thought I would serve in education. And in 2014, leadership, community leaders, business leaders, political leaders, state leaders, kind of within a 72-hour period, I started getting several phone calls saying, Julie, we need you to bring your business skills to this school district. Would you consider running? Okay. And it's famous last words. Just run for one term and then you go back to your life and, you know, just come in for one term. And
yes.
So, you know, if you remember politics back in that time frame, the Tea Party and the Republican Party could not even agree that the sky was blue back
then.
I know. And so within 30 minutes, I had the leader of the Tea Party and the leader of the Republican Party both calling and asking me to run. I said, okay, this might be a sign from the Lord that time to jump in. And then that happened on Saturday afternoon. And then Sunday morning at church, which our pastor never does anything like this, at the end of church service, you know, last hymns being sung, people are exiting to get to their favorite restaurant real quick, you know, kind of what happens into church. And,
and
the pastor says, okay, everybody, just real quick, just stop where you're at. The Lord says somebody's called to serve in government, and the Lord says, do it. And I said, oh, I told my husband,
wow.
I said, here we go. Mm. And so anyways, elected at my local school board, serving a district. When I left, we had about 30,000 children, grew very rapidly. Built 9 new schools in 6 years with lowering property taxes twice. So I always tell people it's not a funding issue, it's a spending issue. And I've lived it, I've experienced it. But just kind of a wild ride of faith to serve children. And I know that sounds odd to say that you need an incredible amounts of faith to serve kids, but you really do, because it's really about being the watchman on the wall and protecting children and, yeah. and protecting their innocence. But when I was first elected, we had a brand new superintendent that had just been hired the same time I was elected. And so I just told my superintendent, I said, just, I want a data dump. I don't want the, you know, the pony show. I don't want, you know, the highlight reel. I want the
real. Give me the numbers.
Yes. Especially coming from a business background. Yeah. I said, any report that you turn into the state of Texas, any data that you generate, financials, crimes, everything, performance, academic performance, I want it all. And I said, and we'll meet in 3 weeks. Well, that happened, did really wonderful things, especially on the business side of the district, took my teachers to being among the highest paid in the state of Texas. In 2015, they were starting pay was around $63,000 a year with full benefits.
Wow.
Negotiated teacher benefits to the point that the IRS wrote a letter to our school district saying, if you continue to offer these benefits, your teachers are gonna have to pay luxury taxes.
Oh goodness.
Yeah. So, I mean,
yeah. Don't be too good to your teachers. Right.
Don't take too good care of them. Right. But anyway, met IRS standards where our teachers didn't have to pay luxury taxes, but really just doing really wonderful things financially. Recasting our long-term debt, our bond debt, to even to this day, my taxpayers are saving $12 million a year for 28 years. My taxpayers are going to save $12 million a year. I mean, so just really on the business side and the financial side, doing really great things.
Yeah.
Taking a top-heavy district, an administrative-heavy district, and really shifting the focus to the classroom, to where our budgets in the last few years that I was serving, we got to 83% of the money was directly tied to the classroom.
Hmm.
So when I tell you I know how to take care of teachers, and education in the classroom is my priority.
Yeah.
My money is where my mouth was, right?
Yes.
Or it's not my money, it's taxpayer money. But really just doing what God calls us to do is being a good steward over the finances. Because it really is, it's other people's money.
Absolutely. Yeah. And you're dealing with in many cases limited resources. So you have to figure out how to best use it. Let's talk about your role with school chaplains, because I noticed you serve on an association. Basically, you lead an association dealing with school chaplains. But talk about that, because we've been working to try to get the school chaplain legislation in every state, which should be a no-brainer. But tell us a little bit about your background there.
So that also came out of my service at my local school district, because when I looked at the data for my local school district, I realized there were problems that the school district was having that only God could solve. They were problems of the heart, problems of morality, and you cannot... Right? What's the famous quote? You can't legislate morality. There wasn't a rule that we could pass or a policy that we could pass.
To change the heart.
Right, that was going to change the heart. Mm. So I really started praying about it. And like I told you, my superintendent, he was new at the time. And so I went to him and I said, when I look at this data, when I look at the crime, the drugs, teacher morale, when I look at all of that data, these are problems that only God can solve. And so I asked him to form the superintendent's pastoral council.
Okay.
And he agreed. And so we invited every pastor, youth leader, everybody that was a leadership, from synagogues and temples, everybody that was considered a spiritual leader in our school district. We invited them to a breakfast with our superintendent, where we just laid out the facts, the truth, right? We were pulling the veil down, and we were being super transparent and super open, because we needed their help, right? There was not a way that we could deal with all of these issues on our own. We needed their help. So we were very open and very transparent about what things were happening on which campuses and where we needed help, you know, where we had the highest population of poor families, that we knew that the kids were eating Monday through Friday at school, but on the weekends, the families were starving. There was no food in the home for the weekends, okay? So where we needed help even feeding families, you know, on Saturday and Sunday in between school. So just issues like that. And so the beautiful thing is about 80% of the people that we invited, they said, we're in. We're all in. Tell us how we can help. Wow. And so we did an extensive background check because we wanted to bring them in a very real capacity for volunteering on our campuses. So we did an extensive background check, and we gave them access to our junior highs and high schools during the lunch hours. And I'm telling you, it was a radical change in our schools. Teacher morale went up. Academics went up. Crime on campuses went down. The temperature of the campus lowered to where academics could become the main thing again, right? It shifted the focus off this constant discipline push and pull to really educating kids. And so when I was elected to the state position, you know, there's a wonderful Bible verse that says, when you're faithful with a little, God will trust you with much. And so I said, Lord, I was faithful with the 30,000 children that I served. I need a way to take this to a state level. What we did with this pastoral council for my school district, we really need a way to bring that to 6 million children or almost 6 million children across the state of Texas. And so about 10 days later, a U.S. senator called me and said, Julie, I have a couple that I'd really like for you to meet, because you know God's faithful. When we start praying, he'll answer.
Yeah.
And so about 10 days later, Senator Cruz called and said, Julie, I have a couple that I'd like for you to meet. And it was Rocky and Yoska Malloy, the founders and president of the National School Chaplain Association, which have the best empirical data of the benefits of a chaplain and the effects of a chaplain in a school setting. I mean, they have over 30,000 full-time school chaplains around the world, and they contract with federal government, so they have to do accurate reporting routinely for federal governments. And the data was just incredible. In 12 years, think about this, 30,000 campuses around the world, in 12 years, not one reported suicide.
Wow.
I had a school district that was a neighboring district that in their AP students had 6 suicides in 1 year among their advanced placement students. So I'm really watching their data and going through their data. And as they say, the rest is kind of history. Senator Mays Middleton carried the chaplain bill for the state of Texas. We attached it to our safety and security allotment funding, which is about an $8 billion fund. And so, $8 million fund. And so that paid for chaplains. So the state of Texas is leading on this and continues to lead on this, where we will now fund, if a school district wants to hire a chaplain for their school district, you can hire them.
Wow. This, Julie, the school chaplain is such a big deal. And we've tried to work with the gentleman you just mentioned in their organization. We're trying to get these done in all 50 states. But the relief from the teacher vantage point and the school administrator, the principal, assistant principal, all those administrative positions, because my wife was an educator and still is to a degree, but I would tell her when she would come home frustrated about the behavioral issues that your job's not to discipline the children, your job's to teach the children. But so often, teachers and administrators get into the discipline business, which I get. There's some of that that's just necessary, but it doesn't need to be a distraction to the primary duty of educating. And you talk about bringing in these chaplains and how it lowers the temperature, it helps the kids with some of their issues. A lot of these children are coming from very broken homes, tough backgrounds, and they need somebody to encourage them. And so I think it's a beautiful thing, and I encourage all 50 states to get these bills over the finish line. Before we wrap up, tell us where you are now. You're on the Texas State Board of Education, but what do you see in the future? That's a loaded question.
It is. I can tell you in my heart, I love serving children. There's, to me, in my humble opinion, there's not a more noble cause than serving children. Mm. My husband would probably love if I ever ran for an office that pays anything, because so far all my elected positions are elected volunteer positions. No, that's just a joke.
You're earning up treasure in heaven.
Yeah, that's sure. A joke in our family. But anyways, I don't know. It's whatever the Lord wants. You know, I have great relationships with many states, and I have great relationships at the national level with our federal government. I have great relationships with you know, presidents and prime ministers around the world. And so, I don't know, my heart is to preserve the U.S. Constitution and put a biblical worldview back into education. And so wherever God takes that, that's where he takes that.
Yes, well, I agree 100% with everything you just said. And the work you're doing is amazing. That's why we wanted to highlight it. And folks, we do have an upcoming episode of AFA at Home, episode 7 coming out here in just a few weeks. where Julie and others highlight the importance of America's education system. We'll be back.
At the Core podcast are available at AFR.net. Now back to At the Core on American Family Radio.
Welcome back to the second segment of today's program here on American Family Radio. Glad to have you back with us. Just a reminder, if you want to subscribe to the podcast, we would greatly appreciate that. And you can do so by visiting your podcast store. Wherever you listen to podcasts, just type in the name of the program At the Core, and you can subscribe to the program, and we'll have it uploaded each afternoon for you to listen to at your convenience. Just type in the name of the program and click the subscribe button, and the podcast will be queued up in your library each and every day. Well, jumping to our next guest, this is a topic I've been looking forward to discussing, and we have on with us right now Pastor John Ensor. He's author and president and president of Passion Life, and he's on with us now. John, welcome to the program.
It's great to be with you. Very good.
Well, John, let's talk about your ministry. Tell me a little backgrounder about Passion Life, and then I definitely want to shift gears into the tiny baby fetal model that you guys are working on and are known for, because it's very fascinating. Yeah. But before we get into the nuts and bolts of that, tell us about Passion Life.
Well, Passion Life is really where people with a pro-life conviction and a world missions conviction come together and get married, because Passion Life is really teaching the church how to stand for life in countries around the world where abortion is most concentrated. Abortion, infanticide, and what we call gendercide, the killing of baby girls in places like northern India and China and so on and so forth.
Well, let's the tiny baby. Tell us about that, because we work with various pro-life ministries, pro-life organizations. Yeah. Preborn, we partner with them on the ultrasounds. But this is pretty creative, pretty fascinating. So tell us about tiny baby.
Well, it's interesting you mentioned preborn and the ultrasound, because that's the high-tech end of what we're doing. And the tiny baby is the corresponding low-tech side of the equation. The reality is, it surprises most people, but the United States only accounts for about 3% of global abortion on an annual basis. 3%. That means that 97% of the moral crisis of abortion is a world missions challenge. And so, having worked in the States and starting pregnancy centers and using ultrasound, we did that in Boston and Miami and several other cities, developing pregnancy centers, we started to work in other countries about a decade or so ago, and tried to see if we couldn't train up the church to start their own version of their pregnancy help clinic, which would include using ultrasound and then using what we now call the tiny baby, or what we actually sometimes call the littlest missionary. So we had this tiny baby designed because we were struggling with how to help people in Vietnam, let's say, or in Colombia or Cuba, immediately have the strength and the resources they needed to say to their neighbor when they met them, this is what your baby looks like. Let me help you find God's provision. So we decided that we needed to come up with a very highly medically accurate 3D printed model in order to maintain the accuracy. But this very low-tech 9-week fetal model that we now hand out by the tens of thousands and in boxes of 50 to pastors allows everybody instantaneously to have the confidence to engage a woman or a couple who are in a pregnancy-related crisis and say, let's talk about your baby and how we might help you find a better solution than abortion.
I'm interested in not only the reaction from folks when you hand in this tiny model of a child, of a very young child in the womb. I'm interested in, number one, the reaction, which is kind of anecdotal, but I'm also interested in if you have like moms that are currently carrying a child that are also being ministered to through this tool, how they respond, because reaching moms who are pregnant, who we don't know whether they're considering abortion or not. I mean, that's your target audience here.
Exactly. Exactly. And the best way to reach those moms is to equip everyday people who are Christians and make them ready and equipped to be able to help their neighbors when they meet them. So here's a couple of anecdotal stories. We were in Colombia. We were down in Bogota, Colombia, training about 75 or 100 pastors. And we took a break at lunch. And right before lunch, we handed everybody one of these tiny baby fetal models. And each pastor will go home with a box of 50 for each pastor. They're going to teach pro-life ethics to the way we teach it. So during the lunch break, one of the pastors ran into a member of his church who was weeping and crying and found out that she was pregnant and just got kicked out of her home. So she said, well, let's go together. He said, let's go together and go see your father and place this little tiny fetal model in her father's hands and said, this is how God has created us at 9 weeks. And is it really true that you want to kick your daughter out rather than helping her learn to trust in God in this difficult point of her life and to trust in God for daily bread? And he changed his mind right there on the spot. And he came back after lunch and he starts giving this story to these other 100 pastors. And so there was a great confirmation, so to speak, among them. They were very excited about the power of this little tiny missionary to proclaim the value of human life to everyday people. That's just one story. When I was in China, we were also teaching the what we call four questions, which is basically our way of teaching what the Bible says about life, about the shedding of innocent blood, about experiencing God's forgiveness, and about the call to rescue the innocent. And these two women came to the training on day one, then came back on day two, and they brought their neighbor and said, listen, we spent all night with our neighbor. She's now pregnant with her second child, which is against the law in China at that time, not anymore. And we showed her what the Bible says, and we showed her this little fetal model. And now we're going to stick with her. We're going to be like the midwives in Egypt, and we're going to help her have her baby. And again, she was able to give a story, her testimony, to these other pastors and get them very excited. So this is those are just two stories of how everyday people feel empowered to just use this little tiny baby to get started, because most of us just don't know where to start when we meet somebody who's in a, you know, in a crisis. We say, oh, I'm not qualified or whatever. But no, this just helps people find their tongue, find their voice, and begin to speak up.
Yeah, it's so simple, but yet so effective. And that's what I love about it, is it's not overly sophisticated. There's not a ton of money tied up in it, but it's very effective. And it's a visual. And we know a lot of people respond well to visuals, being able to hold something, touch it, see it.
That's what
makes this very effective. So, and I noticed, you know, when you look at the size of the child that you guys have, this tiny baby, the size is roughly 9 weeks.
9 weeks
gestation, which according to your website, you kind of outline the significance here. And a couple of them is that by the ninth week, all major organs like the heart, brain, kidney, liver, and lungs are forming. I mean, basically the four chambers of the heart. I mean, these are some critical developmental stages that have happened by week nine. But yet they're so tiny. I mean, you know, one and a half inches, 1 1/4. Just amazing. So I got to ask, John, was this something that God gave you a vision for? Did somebody else have this idea? Who came up with this?
Yeah, I'm very reluctant to take much credit for things. There have been fetal models that pregnancy centers have used for decades, but they're larger. They're more 12 weeks. And they're not very scientifically accurate. And as we just have to become more sophisticated in our movement and more under attack from opposition, we felt that we needed a fetal model that was 100% scientifically accurate. and closer in size to when people are going to be talking to people in crisis. And so we kind of settled, as our Passion Life team talked about this, we got some scientific 3D models, and we messed around with them for several months, and we printed out a dozen or so different examples and just kind of worked it through. And then we took it to places like Cuba and we handed them out. And when we saw people holding them and saying, oh my, or oh wow, and then wanting to show it to others, and children taking it and wanting to show it to their friends, then we knew that we were along the right path in trying to create something that would rapidly reproduce and testify to the human value of life, and would empower people to say to those in crisis, we're going to help you have your baby. We're going to be the good Samaritan in your life. And that's what we were after.
Amen. Amen. Once again, we've been talking to Pastor John Ensor with Passion Life. He's the president there. He's also an author as well, talking about their tiny baby fetal model that is being used all around the world to impact hearts and minds in favor of life as God designed it. Pastor John, tell our folks your website, how folks can read more about your work.
Yeah, they can go to passionlife.org, and they can read all about what we're doing in Asia and throughout Africa and Latin America and Eastern Europe, places where abortion is very concentrated. They can also go to Passion Life Tiny Baby, and they can read all about the tiny baby and how it was designed and the medical accuracy of it. Then they can also help us deliver these boxes of 50 to pastors. So right there now, people can get 5 of these themselves to share with their family and friends and send out 50 to a needy place in the world and equip a pastor in Colombia or Argentina or Vietnam with the box of 50 of these. So if people want to get one, or you want to provide them for your local pregnancy center, just go to Passion Life. Just type in Passion Life Tiny Baby and you'll find our website and you can get some there.
Absolutely. Hey, Pastor John, thanks so much for coming on the program.
It's an honor. God bless you.
All right. God bless you too. Thank you so much. That's Pastor John Ensor with Passion Life. And that website is passionlife.org. We'll link to it in the show notes. And then when you get on their homepage, you can see on the menu bar the tiny baby button. You just click on that and read all about this fascinating model that they've built to witness to people about the issue of life. Well, in the few minutes we have left here, I do want to jump to a few stories. I brought in Bobby, how much time do we have left in this segment? Couple minutes, about 3 or 4 minutes.
Yeah, you've got right at 4.
Okay, perfect. I want to play real quick, and then maybe we'll talk to Chris about this in the last segment. I want to play about a 2.5 roughly minute clip. This is talking about tariffs, of which I've been talking about on the program pretty frequently. This is a 1996 clip of none other than Congresswoman Nancy Pelosi. Yes, Nancy Pelosi, 1996. Fawning over how great tariffs are and how much they're needed to combat unfair trade practices by China. Clip 3.
How far does China have to go? How much more repression? How big a trade deficit and loss of jobs for the American worker? And how much more dangerous proliferation has to exist before members of this House of Representatives will say, I will not endorse the status quo? As I mentioned, it's about jobs, proliferation, and human rights. And there are those who say we shouldn't link human rights and trade and proliferation and trade. I disagree. But if we just want to take up this issue on the basis of economics alone, indeed, China should not receive most favored nation status for several reasons that I'd like to go into now. I'd like to call the attention of our colleagues to this chart on the status quo that the business community is asking each and every one of you to each and every one of us to endorse today. Right now, we have a $34 billion trade deficit with China, the 1995 figure. It will be over $40 billion for 1996. Since the Tiananmen Square massacre, this figure has increased 1,000%, from $3.5 billion then to about $34 billion now. In terms of tariffs, I think it's interesting to note that the average U.S. MFN tariff on Chinese goods coming into the United States is 2%, whereas the average Chinese MFN tariff on U.S. goods going into China is 35%. Is that reciprocal? On exports, China only allows certain industries into China, of U.S. Industries into China, and therefore only 2% of U.S. exports are allowed into China. On the other hand, the U.S. allows China to flood our markets with a third of their exports, and that'll probably go over 40%, and it's limitless because we have not placed any restriction. In terms of jobs, this is the biggest and cruelest hoax of all. Not only do we not have market access, not only do they have prohibitive tariffs, not only are our exports not let in very specifically, but China benefits with at least 10 million jobs from U.S.-China trade. The president in his statement requesting this special waiver said that China trade supports 170,000 jobs in the United States, 170,000 jobs, whereas our imports from China support 10 million jobs at least. Fact is that U.S.-China trade is a job loser.
Where did the Democrat Party of 1996 go?
I want them back.
I want them back too. Resurrect the Democrats. Resurrect the Democrats of 1996. Somebody please. My. They're gone. They're nowhere to be found. Now they're promoting Marxism, socialism, communism. And they're the most pro-China, pro-communist party now. Boy, how things have changed. Nancy Pelosi, pro-tariff and totally against unfair trade practices in 1996. Now, she's too busy eating her ice cream.
At the Core podcast are available at AFR.net. Now, back to At the Core on American Family Radio.
Welcome back to the program. Last segment here underway on this edition of The Core. Chris Woodward's in with us as he is each week. And Chris, welcome back.
Thank you. I was not impacted by tariffs. My appearance was not impacted.
Oh, you just think you weren't impacted, Chris. Let's talk about that. I mean, we got a lot of news that we can talk about.
Yes.
But I just played a clip coming out of the last segment of Nancy Pelosi in 1996 talking about how unfair the trade practices were with China, how America was getting ripped off. President Trump's doing something about it.
Yes.
And what he's doing in the short term, it's kind of like ripping the Band-Aid off. Mm. In the short term, it's not so exciting for some people. But in the long term, it's really the only thing that can be done to reshore America's manufacturing base.
Yes. And that's what he has claimed. That's what people like even Larry Kudlow on Fox yesterday telling Sandra Smith, this is not a terrible thing. Reciprocity is the right approach. It's going to level the playing field. We have for far too long lost a lot of money and hurt American workers abroad based on things that other countries were doing with our exports. Now we're going to return the favor. And they seem to think that while there may be some short-term pain, in the long term, this is going to help Americans. And that's why a lot of people are saying you shouldn't freak out over like how stocks closed yesterday.
Yeah. Well, there's also, Chris, there's a couple different segments of the population here, or the workforce, or the economy. And I want to note that because it matters how people talk about this, all right? There's your financial advisors. Mm-hmm. There's your CNBC talking heads. There's your Fox Business host. And that's kind of one that's your Wall Street kind of group. Nothing negative on them. That they play a good role. Everybody needs a good financial advisor. Mm-hmm. There's the business leaders, right? The CEOs, and then there's the workers. Mm-hmm. As far as looking at the economy, and specifically as we're talking tariffs, the financial world, the Wall Street world, they're not about this tariff thing, right? And they every day they just sound like a broken record, and they go on TV and they talk about how terrible tariffs are. This is a bad idea. It's a tax on the consumer. I mean, I can't tell you how many times I've heard this. And it's not that they're being dishonest, but it's that they're not telling the whole picture.
Mm-hmm.
And what I mean by that is they're ragging the tariffs, and they speak about tariffs as if they're some, like, the 11th commandment is thou shalt not be a tariff.
Yes.
even though that's nowhere to be found.
Mm-hmm.
But they talk almost religiously about tariffs. I don't know whether this is like an economics class thing or what, but I've never seen so much passion against something in my life. But the point I'm trying to make here is that what's not being talked about by most, some are talking about it, but what's not being talked about when the people are ragging tariffs is that the long-term goal here is to mm-hmm. not hurt the stock market. The long-term goal here is to reshore America's manufacturing base, and the stock market will recover.
Yes.
It always does.
Mm-hmm.
The stock market recovered after the Great Depression. The stock market recovered after COVID, and mm-hmm. everything in between.
Yeah. Yeah. Something people need to realize is that many television networks, especially those on cable, are controlled by companies that also own companies that make things and sell things abroad. So take that into account the next time you hear somebody on television tell you that tariffs are bad. It's because those companies that control the information also make things and are trying to sell things abroad. And maybe they're concerned about their financial bottom line and they want you to think it's bad. So therefore, that's why they truck out 10 people, nine of which say tariffs are bad. We can't do this. It's terrible for the economy. It's going to hurt Republicans in the election and all these things we've heard for the last 36 hours.
Yeah.
In terms of actually like figuring out what you really need to do here, I would do like really have a couple of conversations with an investment advisor versus take all of my stock information from somebody on a television screen.
Yeah.
I know we're on a screen right now, but we're not investment advisors.
Well, and the fear mongering is pretty high to your point.
Mm-hmm.
And people don't need to be irrational here. Now, if you were going to retire next week and you were 100% still in the markets,
yes.
In high risk funds, then that's a whole other ballgame.
Yes.
But that's a rare circumstance, and that raises other questions than just what's the stock market going to do tomorrow. But Chris, it is rather disappointing and frustrating that there are a lot of people out there that talk about they give half truths, and what I mean by that is they say the tariffs are going to raise prices on the consumers mm-hmm. in America domestically. And I honestly, I'm not going to say that's not true. I don't think that's always the case. Mm-hmm. I think it just depends on the product.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
how
yeah.
the company responds to the tariff. Some just eat it because their profit margins are so big. Others raise the prices to make up for the tariff when they import the goods. So I don't really disagree with that.
Mm-hmm.
I think I'm more sold on the long-term gain here, that if some Chinese-made product is 50 cents more or a dollar more, then I'm okay with that because I understand that American companies that are in the same space are benefiting from this.
Yes.
And so the net gain down the road in the long run is a massive boost of the American economy, but it's just that we've got to get these Wall Street nerds on board with the idea that we're about reshoring America's manufacturing base, even though I might pay 50 cents more on the Chinese-made product.
Yeah, I think one of the things the administration could do, and those that are going on television to try to explain to people why they're going to benefit from this in the long run, is to do a better job of communicating how this is going to impact you and maybe give you a fair estimate as to when you're really going to see positives here, because I think... one of the reasons why they failed to calm people is they just come out and say, this is going to help people. It's going to level the playing field. But you really need to bring in like visual aids, a chart, a graphic or something you can like turn pages like you're playing Pictionary.
Yes.
And you can explain to people why your flip-flops are going to cost more next week, but your 401k is going to be better next month.
Yes. Yeah. One video I saw, Chris, and I should have brought in this clip, but this gentleman, and this is just one example, but if we want to give like practical examples of what a tariff might do, he was talking about, let's say a lighter, right? Let's say a lighter, one's made in China, one's made in America. He said, this lighter right here, for example, that's made in China might mm-hmm. be $15. And then this lighter over here that's made, did I say China? The first one's made in China, $15. Let's say this other lighter is made in America and it's $25, right? So it's pretty, it's more expensive enough where a lot of consumers will buy the Chinese made one.
Yeah.
The tariff is simply going to bring the price of that Chinese made lighter up to either the same price of the American made, maybe even a little more expensive than the American made. Mm-hmm. The American made products are completely unaffected by the tariffs if they're being bought, if they're being manufactured and sold in America. So that being said, it helps the American made products.
It does.
Big time, big time, big time. And it's not touching those prices. And if people want an example of the effects of this, talking about a specific product, I know a lot of people in the furniture industry and mattresses, American-made mattresses were getting just hammered with these foreign dumping, the dumping of foreign-made from Vietnam and other places, these mattresses made for pennies on the dollar. And Biden, and this may go back to Trump, but Biden specifically had tariffs on foreign mattresses that were being dumped in America's market. Now, those cheap mattresses, for example, on Amazon, they went up because they were being tariffed, but it made the American-made mattresses way more competitive.
Yeah.
And now we have a reshoring of the furniture industry and mattress manufacturing in America because of those tariffs.
Yeah, and manufacturing is important because you can't be a superpower if you don't make stuff.
That's
correct. And you need to make far more than just weapons. You also need to make stuff so that Bill has a job. And because Bill has a job, his neighborhood looks better. And because that neighborhood looks nicer, the community itself
is better off.
Yeah. And so is the school system and all the other people that pay way too much property tax.
Another example of this, and I just can't talk about this enough because Trump is getting hammered by everybody and their cousin on the tariff thing, and I think it's unfair. I think it's really unfair, and a lot of the analyst analysis is dishonest too. The another example of this is the pharmaceutical industry. Now, during COVID, folks, let's go take a little trip back down memory lane, although it wasn't a good memory, and that is COVID. During COVID, we all realized, wow, China's making all of our medicine. And that's a problem. And at the time, I would guarantee you 90% of the populace, Democrat and Republican, would agree that's a problem. Unless there's some, you know, communist hacks that love China. I think it's a problem. Well, why is it that China is producing the vast majority of America's pharmaceutical supplies and drugs? That's because we've allowed them to do it. And we haven't punished it. And we haven't incentivized it domestically. That's a national security issue. And Stephen Miller at the White House, Deputy Chief of Staff, did a pretty good kind of sit down 101 about the tariffs and why it's a national security issue. But Chris, we're that's a vulnerability. If China cuts off the spigot on our insulin, a lot of people are going to be concerned about that.
Yeah, I mean, and there's a ton of medications that are made in China, to your point. One of the members of Congress that's also a physician was on Washington Watch on Wednesday of this week talking about how we need to give Trump the benefit of the doubt here and be patient because this is going to create a level playing field. And one of the things that he did mention was pharmaceuticals. It is stupid to let your adversary who operates a government by the complete opposite of yours to make things that you need to be healthy.
And to be alive.
Yes. I mean, that's just, that's like,
it's, that doesn't make that make sense.
Yeah, it doesn't.
No.
A lot of things that our government does doesn't make sense. And Republicans are partly to blame here because this problem with China making our stuff goes back to before we were born.
Right.
I mean, Nixon got it going again where we were going to have ties with China. And then several Republican presidents since then, along with Democrats, did trade policies with China or whatnot. Trump did try to put a stop to that, made things a little better during his last term. And he's trying to do it again. The pharmaceutical thing, I mean, we need to reshore a whole bunch of stuff.
Right.
Because we are letting people that we would go to war with tomorrow make things that we would need to win that war.
That's exactly right. It's a massive vulnerability. And so we can talk about what about Taiwan and what would America do over Taiwan? Well, I don't even want to think about that. Because who wants to think about our insulin for diabetics being cut off because China says, oh, okay, you're going to go to war with us over Taiwan. Well, we're not going to send you your meds anymore.
Right.
And the same thing with our lithium supply for the lithium batteries. And what's so crazy, Chris, is a lot of this actually conflicts with a leftist agenda. So the left's all about this Green New Deal, climate change. Mm-hmm. We got to drive EVs. Unless it's a Tesla, we're going to boycott those because we don't like Elon Musk.
Right.
But even though they've been Tesla fans since its inception, the left has. Go over to California, all the liberals are driving Teslas now because they've all of a sudden found their moral values.
Now they've traded them for gas guzzling cars.
Yeah, give me a break.
And getting killed on the resale.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. But the lithium for the batteries, a lot of these raw materials for these batteries, for the solar panels, all this left-wing environmental stuff, it's coming straight out of China.
Mm-hmm.
And China could cut that off overnight. So there's some major issues. So you and I are talking national security. But I will say that the White House has been doing a pretty good job, and I think this Liberation Day was more of a reset.
Mm-hmm.
Because early on, President Trump, I mean, he was going a lot of different directions on these tariffs. One day he said, I might cut him a break. The next day he said, I'm not cutting him a break. And I will agree, there was a little bit of mixed messaging early on about the tariffs. But this announcement at the White House, I mean, he had the board with the numbers on it.
Mm-hmm.
It was abundantly clear. They put out good messaging. And there's been a lot of business owners, whether it be car dealers, selling American-made cars that are really high on the tariffs.
Yeah, and the fact that you had United Auto Worker members there with UAW gear on, standing there at the podium with the president, the Republican president, announcing tariffs, the fact that you had them saying this is the right thing to do, it's going to help us, that doesn't bode well for Democrats that have long thought UAW members were just, they're always going to vote for us.
Right.
That wasn't the photo op they wanted to see earlier this week. So there are people that have benefited and may generally or historically side with Democrats on a lot of things, have said, hey, listen, Trump is helping me. I support this. I mean, it wasn't just one guy. There were a bunch of UAW members there,
yes,
union members that make automobiles, saying this is the right thing to do.
Yeah, and if you're in the manufacturing base, if you're in the manufacturing workforce and you've had your factory shuttered over the last 20 or 30 years, 40 years. This is a big deal.
Mm-hmm.
This is a big deal. So I just think there needs to be equal airing of the pros and cons of these tariffs.
Yes.
And I understand it's not a one, you know, there's some viable discussion about some potential negative consequences with tariffs when it comes to pricing.
Mm-hmm.
But all in all, I'm 100% in favor of this, at least in the short term.
Yes. Make stuff, grow stuff, and drill for oil, and there you go.
And look, President Trump's been in office for like 2 months.
Mm-hmm.
The last 2 months have had positive manufacturing hires.
Right.
We've been in a manufacturing recession when it comes to payroll for the last 2 years. We've been shedding hundreds of thousands of manufacturing jobs, shipping them overseas. Mm-hmm. So we've got a lot of way to go. Thanks to President Trump, he's on the right track. Thanks, Chris.
Thank you.
All right, folks, we'll see you next time. Meet Kelsey. When she found out she was pregnant, she wasn't sure where to turn. But after meeting with the counselors at a preborn network clinic who loved and supported her, and after hearing her baby's heartbeat on a free ultrasound, she chose life.
When a mother looks at her child through a sonogram, it does something to you. You know, I ended up deciding to keep my son, who is now 5 years old today. He's amazing. He brings absolute joy to my heart. I could not imagine life without him. Not only did they help me save his life, they saved my life.
By introducing a woman to her baby on ultrasound, a baby's chance of life doubles. If you have the means, would you consider a leadership gift to save babies in a big way? Your tax-deductible donation of $5,000 will sponsor Preborn's entire network for 24 hours, helping to rescue 200 babies. To donate, dial #250 and say the keyword baby. That's #250 on your phone and then say the keyword baby. Or you can donate securely at preborn.com. That's preborn.com.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.